On Monday, a new voice on 2FM, Owen McDermott, was standing in on the drive-by show. Now, the traffic news is a serious business, but Owen challenged the AA Roadwatch guy to do it that bit differently.
2FM Traffic and Travel.
Beginning in Dublin, where the traffic's trouble and delays you'll be having on the road to Navan. Traffic's acting the maggot, outbound a baggot. If you live in the place that they call Lace, you'll be at a loss at Newlands Cross. On the South Keys, it's a bit of a squeeze, but on the North Keys, you'll be driving with ease. Now for Mahunzo's out in Bray, traffic is absolutely A-OK. Moving to Cork and to Glamorgan, where, to be honest, it's not too dire. But on Patrick's, Albert and Washington Street, ye be facing delays, that's why I'm dropping this beat. Finally in Galway and out by the bay, traffic is the bomb up on the prom. Noel Byrne, A Roadwatch.
Yeah! And actually, there was plenty of fun on RTE Radio this week. These little girls on Colour Matters on Radio 1 Extra. Liam O'Brien asked them to tell him about the colour orange.
When I came back from Balbriggan and I had loads of orange freckles on my face. Freckles stand for beauty.
When I went to a 24th, and Saturday gone, and my ma put on tan and her legs turned orange.
On Mooney, comedian Noel V. Ginnity was giving lessons in one-liners.
This old man went to the doctor. The doctor says, "What's the matter with you?" The old man says, "I can't pee." The doctor says, "What age are you?" He says, "I'm 97. I said, "You peed enough."
And on Lyric FM's Rolling Wave programme, the fiddle player Dennis Murphy's widow Julia Mary talked about getting the ship to America in 1949 and the bread at the dinner table.
The first meal we got was all beautiful snow white bread. And everyone at the table, they ate all the bread, you know, before the meal came. They had all the white bread eat. Oh, we enjoyed it, after.
You can see the stacks of white bread, can't you? The power of objects to convey a feeling. Elsewhere on RTE Radio this week, those objects were doors and handbags. The doors were on the History Show special on those left behind during the First World War.
My father only knew his father for 2 years. The only recollection my father had of his father was him saying in his office, "Close the door behind you, John." And that's all he remembered. These are the kind of stories I kind of grew up listening to.
My great-uncle, Alec, went off to the war. And Granny told me about her brother. She could remember he wore his uniform and she could remember the glint of the sun off the buttons in the uniform. And she never seen him again.
John was a young man. He was helping his father on the farm. They would only have a very small farm of land. He told his father that he was going off to fight in the war. He says, "Pull the door after you." The answer that the son made him was, "Where I'm going, it'll be an awful distance to pull a door after me."
The handbags telling the story are in an exhibition of personal effects left behind by residents of Grange Gorman Asylum in Dublin. The asylum is now going to be the new campus for the Dublin Institute of Technology. The personal effects will be part of a documentary on One later this year, and they've been made into an exhibition by artist Alan Cunahan. The exhibition is a very real experience for those who go along to it, according to writer Dermot Bulger. He says, when you see the handbags there, for example, they remind you of the handbags in your own life and the women who used them.
My mother died in 1969 very suddenly in the Richmond Hospital, and when we were clearing out my father's house just 2 years ago, we thought we'd everything cleared out, and then somebody said, "Let's check the attic." And in the attic we found the handbag my mother had brought into hospital, and it was all those things that were inconsequential and yet of enormous significance and importance to her, and it was something that nobody could decode apart from her. And like, there was a letter I wrote to her as a child that was in the handbag. And so looking at Alan's wonderful exhibition and all those handbags, all those rosary beads, all those letters.
Why do you think your father kept it like that?
Because I think it... I can't speak for my father, my father's dead, but I think it contained the essence of my mother.
Dermot Bulger has written a poem about his mother's handbag, and here's an extract.
When we open up the attic, we discover the suitcase my mother packed for her last trip into hospital, a wash bag and talc, clothes she never got to wear home, a purse crammed with prayers, and a folded letter I wrote as a 10-year-old for my sister to bring into her. I spend one page telling her how good I am being, then cram 3 pages with scrawled X's, each one to represent a kiss. Last week, a granddaughter she never knew sang on stage, luminous and radiant in a band named Little X's for Eyes. For 4 decades, in a letter, in a purse, in a suitcase, in this attic, these galaxies of X's were the banished eyes of a bewildered child. But unfolding them, I see myself stare out at who I am now, across this life I could never have envisaged as I scrawled on tidy X's for a woman I last saw smiling from a hospital bed, who sealed them into her purse when nurses shaved her head in preparation for the operation she would never recover from, praying that one day I might open her purse and be surprised to find my X's returned to me. Big X's for kisses, little X's for eyes.
Beautiful, Dermot, beautiful. And thank you for reading that.
I read it in memory of all those people, all those children who never got to open the handbags that were in Adam's exhibition.
Dermot Bulger with Sean O'Rourke on Monday. And tomorrow night at 8 on Radio 1, the drama on 1 is Dermot's play Walking the Road. And if you can't wait until then, it's online on the Drama on 1 site now. For Dermot's mother's generation, the handbag contained everything and you couldn't leave home without it. For our generation, it's probably the mobile phone. It's so valuable, it's impossible to ignore it, even while driving. And that was the point being made on Ryan Tuberty's show on 2FM this week when Ita and Justin Laffin came in to talk about their sister Gemma. 4 years ago, Gemma was sitting in a car with her boyfriend Alan in a motorway traffic jam in England. A truck driver named Chris Kane was using the same road.
And he had been texting all the way up along the motorway.
While driving a truck.
While driving. And, you know, there were signs, you know, in the UK there was plenty of signs saying that there was delays ahead and to expect traffic. But because he was texting on the way up, he didn't see these signs. And he was driving at 55 miles an hour. And I suppose the problem was he was driving a very big truck and there was a truck in front of them. And he didn't realise he hit them, and he got to the point where he was actually in the hospital and he didn't realise he'd hit a van and he didn't realise he'd killed somebody. So, and that was all while he was having a conversation via text.
And one of the texts was 117 strokes of the key, so it was, you know, substantial text. It wasn't yes or no's. It was, you know, it would have taken his eyes off the road for a long time.
Yeah.
He effectively had his head down driving a truck.
Well, actually, there was reports. Yeah, there was reports that there was people who were driving up beside him were beeping the horn, and because they could see his head down.
Gemma was killed. Alan survived with serious injuries, and the truck driver got 5 years in prison and a 5-year driving ban to run while he's in prison.
Every second person listening to this program texts and drives, I would say, pretty easily.
That's the problem, and people do it with their children in the car.
Yeah.
You know, like, would people get in a car if they were drunk driving? Do you know what I mean? With their children in the car? No one would drink over the limit.
What do you think when you see people driving along at a clip with their phone in their hand texting? What goes through your mind?
At the start, I suppose after Gemma, it would have been a lot of anger, and I probably would have rang the Garda helpline and reported a couple of people, but asked them not to do anything about it. Just go and call to them and explain what can happen.
Ita and Justin got swift reactions to their appeals for people not to text and drive.
Anya's in Mayo says she's crying listening, as you would expect, to the two guests. They should be so proud, well spoken, and the message has got through to me. I only texted this morning while driving, and I promise myself and the greater public I will never do it again from this second on. Life is too precious. To put driving and texting into context, I drive a truck that is 7.5 foot wide and 26 foot long, and I've passed people going in the opposite direction who haven't seen me because their head is down texting.
From the Tuberty Show on Monday. On his show on Tuesday, he took part in the Ice Bucket Challenge, the craze of the summer of 2014, along with the loom bands. The idea is that a bucket of icy water is poured over your head as part of a fundraising drive for motor neurone disease research. Although our need for celebrity involvement means that a lot of the events look like people who are healthy and happy doing something fun for those who aren't. And in some cases it looks less like raising money than raising celebrity profiles. Ryan doesn't need his profile raised, and he gamely agreed to have a bucket of icy water thrown over him in studio, although someone at the last minute thought of the electrical equipment.
Watch the telly, watch
okay,
the telly. Right.
Okay. Okay, goodbye everyone, see you tomorrow. 3, 2, 1, go!
Yeah!
We Radio 1 listeners have our own version of the cold shower. It's called Liveline. Ronan Collins leaves you feeling all warm and fuzzy.
Sophie, and our Jim and Margaret O'Donovan celebrating 50 years of wedded bliss today. Love from the 6 children, Emma, Anna, Lou, Jean, Patrick and Claire, and their 12 wonderful children.
And then Liveline comes along and scares the living daylights out of you.
And there was this guy standing out under a light, right, injecting himself into his penis, right? Well, it looked like there was his penis, it was definitely his groin area, right?
But then on Wednesday, I'm proved wrong, because Joe Duffy had one of the most uplifting interviews of the whole week on the radio.
How many rooms do you rent out?
I rent out 4 for the last 32 years.
The subject was accommodation for students, and Joe ended up talking to a woman named Una who runs Diggs. Who'd have thought a favoured location for Miles Nagapaline still existed? Have a listen to how Joe finds out about Diggs and Una, one laughing surprise after another.
Now, I have to say that if I turn my back, they will turn on the heating.
And the immersion.
And no, they've never discovered where it was. So
they'd be on bath all the time.
The only thing is that the heating is the only thing that they do chance their arms with.
And is there anyone else with you in the house?
I had 4 children as well.
Okay.
So while all that was going on, it was a bit chock-a-block now at that point. But at this stage now, it's lovely because we can come and go as we please.
But do you find those students in your kitchen?
Not at all. They're absolutely... Do you know what it is? They're better than your own kids. They're there and they're apologising if they're in your way, and they're just so nice. And they look after my dog. And they do. It's all about treating them as adults.
And you've never had a problem?
I have had no problem.
Well, have you had people who would be idiosyncratic even?
No.
Slightly different or...
drew a cross in his forehead, but I mean, so does a lot of people do self-harming quietly, but like he got over it.
He drew a cross. I mean, he did not a tattoo. No.
That was a bit of self-harming, but then when we got to the bottom of it, sure, the poor fellow had problems, but he was grand. He was back the next year. You know.
And did they come back and see you afterwards?
Oh, I've heard. Jeepers almighty. I was just telling my sister this morning, now she's in Roscommon, and she's looking for students from Athlone if she can get them.
Yeah.
But they come back to me year after year after year.
And if needs be, you'd have them for Christmas, if needs be.
Oh, listen, if needs be, I have had them. Yeah. Around... I don't mind at all. Because they...
And you liked every single one of them.
I have never had a problem because, you see, I'm not judgmental.
Sounds fantastic, because over the 32 years you would have had nearly 200 of them. 140
easily. Yeah.
And you've never disliked any of them.
Never have I disliked anyone, because you see there's good in every single person.
Here. And you do you take mix? Do you take all men? Or?
Oh yeah, mix, a total mix. Yeah.
And would you take a couple in a bedroom?
No. I draw the line at that. I'm afraid I'm the old school there. I draw the line of, with that one, because whatever they want to do extramurally, they can do it. They can go down to the bar now if they want. They have freedom of that, and it's full of woodlice. So
down to the barn. And if you caught one, is that a rule? You say do not have any overnight guests.
No overnight guests. Oh yeah, and smoking and drinking out the gap.
Out the gap. Okay. And what about did any couples ever meet? Are you with me? You can't legislate against that, Una, male or female.
Well, I can't, but I can suggest that it wouldn't be the best thing to have rattling hum during the night. Do you know what I mean?
And if you did hear rattling hum,
I'd be very jealous. Okay. That's all I can say.
But would you put them out?
I would not. I'd have a little discussion with them. Not at all. No. These are adults. And they're starting off in the world.
Okay.
And they deserve a break. And
what did your own children think of these interlopers in the house?
They never bothered too much about it. Now, they felt that some of them got more attention than they did. On the other hand, then my
and
kids.
Do you meet the parents as well sometimes?
Oh, I do. I just met a set of parents yesterday.
Okay.
Now, so, but I mean, the bottom line is my own kids. Now, I'd safely say that they suffered a bit, you know, at the early stages. But overall, for us.
And what do you do with the few extra bob you have?
Have a ball, Joe.
And what does that mean? Holidays or rattling home?
That when my a bit of everything. It means that when my kids were growing up, they were designer. I was done stores, and now it's reversed.
Oh, hello.
And we can go and come as we please.
Okay. But you love doing it, obviously. I'd say you're.
I love doing
I'd
it.
I'd say you're an El Tonic. And do you see them every morning, Una? Would you greet them?
No, I've never seen a student in the morning in my life. I never got up.
Oh, it's you who never got up.
I never got up, no.
But you would give them advice and agony aunt stuff, and if they were having...
Oh, I love it. I thrive on it.
Now, you're not nosy, are you?
Completely.
Okay.
I'm hyacinth personified.
Okay.
I used to work with a man called Trevor Thompson in RCI, and Trevor always referred to myself and my husband as Hyacinth and Richard.
Una, the tonic of a landlady on Liveline on Wednesday. And that and all the other programmes you've heard here can be heard again on the RTE Radio Player. This is Playback on RTE Radio 1. I'm Ronan Kelly, sitting in for Marion Richardson. The news this week was weighty with stories of violence as a punishment and a deterrent.
17 people were abducted, murdered and secretly buried by the IRA during the Troubles. But fresh searches of one of those sets of remains of the IRA's disappeared are to start in County Meath within days. Specialist forensic investigators are preparing to survey a bog in Orristown for the remains of Brendan McGraw, who vanished in April 1978.
The abductions of people like Brendan McGraw from Republican areas served as a crude warning to his neighbours. This week, crude warnings elsewhere came in the form of beheadings. In Saudi Arabia, 4 men were beheaded for supposedly smuggling drugs. But the most high-profile such case this week was of US journalist James Foley, who was shown on video being decapitated by an Islamic State executioner who had a British accent. It may have looked crude, but according to photographer Sebastian Myers, Islamic State are very media savvy. He's working in Iraq and has spoken to a local photographer who's working in the Islamic State-controlled area.
He was a photographer for about 15 years, and when Islamic State came in, they made photography illegal. A group of Islamic State officials met with him, and it sounded like a very convivial meeting. They seemed to say, it's fine, we don't have a problem with it. But before he started working, he was then put in touch with another person who said to him, you will do exactly what we tell you, and if we find that you do anything that we don't like, we'll kill you. He went to the Mosul television station, and he met with a third person, and that guy told him, you will give me all of your memory cards from your digital cameras, and the images that I like, you can distribute. I will take a copy that will go in our archive, and the images I don't like, we'll delete. And if I find that you don't give me all of your memory cards, if I find that you are sneaking memory cards, I'll give you 100 lashes.
So, how does this play out in terms of the photographs he takes?
He has a minder. The minder sometimes works a bit, you know, like a Hollywood director, and will get crowds to swarm around him and chant pro-Islamic State slogans. And the other aspect is he has to do what he's told. The night that the Islamic State attacked the city of Sinjar, a city of about 300,000+ people, he got a call to say, you have to come and cover our assault. So he went with them and he covered the assault. And then as the Yazidi fled up the mountain, he saw 3 children die in front of him. And too embarrassed to cry in front of the family members, especially the men, he turned away. At that point, he was summoned by militants of the Islamic State who said, come here. And they took him to a group of 30 men lined up on the ground, face down, with their hands tied behind their back. They said, photograph this. They then executed all 30 men in front of 3 or 4 of their female family members. He has no other choice but to do what they say, so he photographed it.
Photographer Sebastian Myers speaking on the On the Media programme on Radio 1 Extra during the week. News of our own homegrown horror came out last weekend when the suppurating wound of the Irish abortion experience was poked by another foreign woman to whom it had to be explained how we do things here. We have abortion in Ireland, but not actually in Ireland. For reasons of confidentiality, the details are sparse, but what we're told is that a very young woman arrived in Ireland a few months ago. She was pregnant. She claimed to have been raped and wanted an abortion. She didn't have the money to travel to the UK and became suicidal. Late in her pregnancy, she was denied an abortion by the expert panel set up under recent legislation, but she was allowed a caesarean section. The baby was born on the cusp of viability, an elegant-sounding phrase that belies the condition of the child's life.
A baby born at 24, 25 weeks is going to spend a long period of time in neonatal intensive care. Most of these babies will survive, 80 to 90% of them will survive, but only 20 to 30% of them will have intact survival. So you've not only got the cost of care within in the acute stages, but you've also got the long-term issues that can arise, and they can be anything from mild learning difficulties to physical issues to cerebral palsy to death.
Dr. Sam Coulter-Smith of the Rotunda Hospital on the Sean O'Rourke Show. The baby's mother is in a bad way too. Kitty Holland of the Irish Times interviewed her.
She's extremely fragile, very vulnerable. And I would say that in my 18 years in journalism, I've never met someone as fragile and delicate as this young woman is. She has no English. She has no money. She has very few people here. And where she is at the moment, she has no one. So she found out she was pregnant during a medical assessment when she arrived into the country and was told she was pregnant, and she immediately said that she would rather die than have this child. It was a rapist's child and that she couldn't bring this child into the world.
So what did she do then? Who did she talk to? Did she seek advice from anybody?
She was referred on then by the practitioner that she'd seen at that point to the Irish Family Planning Association, recognising that they could give her advice on her options. She was she had another pregnancy test. The pregnancy was reconfirmed, and she was then sent for a scan to a hospital to assess the gestational stage. She was 8 weeks and 4 weeks, 4 days pregnant, and she was told that if she wanted to go ahead and have a termination, she would have to face legal obstacles which would have to be surmounted, which would be an exit and re-entry visa, because she wasn't free to leave the country. So she said she wanted to go ahead and do that, and the necessary forms were filled in, and as far as she understood at that point, she was going to be helped. She had a series of further meetings with the Irish Family Planning Association and counselling, and obviously asked about, you know, progress on the visa. She never saw a visa, but she was told at about 16 weeks about the costs that she was going to be facing. There's no funding for women from, unless it's deemed that they have to travel for an abortion by the state, there's no funding for that. So she was going to have to come up, she was told, with up to €1,500.
Money which presumably she didn't have.
Absolutely didn't have, and couldn't turn to anyone to help her raise it.
At any time did she say to anybody that she was feeling suicidal?
She told me and Ruan that she did say this at 8 weeks and 4 days, and that she continued to express these feelings throughout the counselling. And indeed at 16 weeks, when she was told about the costs and realised how absolutely trapped she was really in Ireland and that she couldn't access an abortion here, that she decided she was going to take her own life. And she described that to myself and Ruan yesterday, an attempt that was interrupted.
Kitty Holland of the Irish Times on Morning Ireland. The issue was debated on the Sean O'Rourke Show on Tuesday by Senator Ronan Mullen and Claire Daly, TD. If you ever wanted to know what radio during the abortion debates of the 1990s was like, this is it.
I've been very concerned since last week from the beginning in the way this is reported. Not one shred of sympathy evinced for the child. Do you know, for example, Sean, whether the incubator is a boy or a girl?
I don't, and if I did, I don't think I would necessarily say it on air, because we're very conscious of the need to respect privacy in this case.
I, with great respect to you, I think that's a pure excuse, because the reason I mention it is that it shows how little the focus is on the important fact.
Sean, can I come in here?
Struggling for his or her life in this situation. But what we have had our media panel loaded with people. We have an Irish Times editorial today looking for the change in our constitution to deprive a whole section of the of protection of the law. So I am very worried about the role of the ISPA. And politicians like Claire, you know, I mean, do some people in our society prefer that children in this situation would end up in a hospital incinerator instead of a hospital incubator?
And Claire Daly, you better...
John, could I come in here? You see, I think we have to...
involved in this situation.
We have to not engage in scaremongering, and we do have to look at the facts and look at the reality. And the logic of Ronan's position is that women who have been the subject of a violent rape, out of which they become pregnant, in his opinion, should be forced to carry to full term the offspring of that violent act. Now, that is cruel and degrading. It's torturous, and it is something which most people would believe is a gross violation of women's rights.
From Today with Sean O'Rourke on Tuesday. When the story broke over the weekend, the government quickly reassured the Irish people that we wouldn't have to vote on the issue of abortion anytime soon.
I think a future government will have to look at another referendum, and I personally would be concerned in particular about the issue where a mother has to carry a fetus that is not going to survive outside the womb. I think that, that those are cases in particular that I think women actually in particular feel strongly that that those ones will have to be revisited at some stage.
Does that mean that you would like to see another referendum on repealing the Eighth Amendment?
I would like to see it in the future, but I don't think it won't happen in the lifetime of the current government.
Minister John O'Sullivan on the This Week programme. The government, unlike some of the pregnancies, will run to term. Maybe they were having some doubts, though, by Thursday, when the phrase, "it's the small things that trip you up," was recalled.
Good morning. It's 7 o'clock on Thursday, the 21st of August, on RT Radio 1. This is Morning Ireland with Christopher McKevitt and Cathal McCullough. The death has taken place of former Taoiseach Albert Reynolds.
His family say he passed on shortly before 3 a.m. First elected to the Dáil in 1977 for Longford West Meath, he led two coalitions.
Morning Ireland on Thursday devoted the whole two-hour programme to the death of former Taoiseach Albert Reynolds. Listening to it evoked a conversation outside any Irish funeral. People are gathered in huddles, waiting for the family to finish shaking hands with everyone. The conversation in the huddle ebbs and flows. Everyone has something nice to say about the deceased. But then, as time goes on, the fact that we're all humans with faults cannot be ignored. So, Fergus Finlay praised Albert Reynolds' work in the North.
Not too many people believed that he would succeed in bringing about the IRA ceasefire. In about 12 days' time, those who want to are going to be in a position to celebrate the 20th anniversary of this. It's incredibly poignant that he won't be around for that.
Then Conor Hunt's obituary touched on his failings.
In more recent times, Mr. Reynolds was criticised by the Mahon Tribunal for seeking donations for the party from developer Owen O'Callaghan. Mr. Reynolds, the tribunal found, had abused political power.
Then Micheál Martin said nice things about Albert.
A fantastic and very effective and enduring political career, which, of course, the enduring legacy of which is bringing and assisting and bringing peace to the island of Ireland. And I think, hopefully, the family will be consoled by that extraordinary legacy.
Then the conversation drifted back to the human frailties again, and John Bruton was asked about a jibe.
Albert Reynolds once famously, reportedly accused you of being John Unionist.
Well, look, I don't think that was a slip of the tongue. He probably thought it at the time, but I don't think he meant any, all that much harm by it.
And finally, Olivia O'Leary joins the notional huddle to deftly steer the conversation back to pleasant memories of the man.
He was unsentimental. He made deals. That's what he did as a businessman. And I remember talking to him after the ceasefire and asking him about it. And he said, one thing in business, he said, you keep your eye on the rabbit. And he kept saying this, you keep your eye on the rabbit. And he's right. He kept following the deal. Unlike Haughey, who may have been more conscious of pursuing his position as constitutional leader on the cause of constitutional nationalism, Albert wanted to stop the guns, and that was his absolute focus. And the wonderful thing about him, As you know, he was a garrulous man. He would talk forever. It was brilliant. He'd chat away to you on the phone. But in that period, he kept quiet, and not even his two coalition partners, first O'Malley and then Dick Spring, knew totally what was going on and that Martin Manser was talking to the Provisional IRA. But he was practical. He, for instance, Charlie Haughey'd had a terrible relationship with the president, Mary Robinson, on Haughey's side, that was. But Albert said, I remember talking to him, and he said, listen, you know, she's a good little pony. Let her off. Let her go to Northern Ireland and shake Gerry Adams' hands. Sure, I mean, what harm will that do? It's only for the good. But I remember the description of Mary Robinson as a pony will stick with me forever. He was stubborn. I mean, his refusal to withdraw the word dishonest in the whole...
This is what he said about Des O'Malley. His tarnisher from the Progressive Democrats.
Exactly, in the whole beef tribunal process. All he had to do was withdraw that word dishonest. But he wouldn't do it. And, you know...
And his government collapsed as a result.
And his government collapsed. And I remember sitting in the press gallery looking down the day before he actually resigned. He made a shambling speech. There were bits of paper everywhere. But it was the first time I had seen Albert not being cocky. Cocky was what Albert was. And suddenly he was shambling. And on the day he left, he looked up at us in the press gallery and he said, you jump all the big ones, it's the little ones that trip you up.
Olivia O'Leary on the Morning Ireland special on the death of Albert Reynolds. Ronan Kelly here sitting in for Marion Richardson. This is Playback. Now, the story of the week for patience was on the science series on Radio 1 Extra, the digital channel. The series is called What's It All About and is presented by Sean Duke and Colette Kinsella. And this week they were talking about communicating with possible extraterrestrials, and they were taking it seriously.
The main problem is that we sadly don't live for very long. And if you think that the nearest star is 4 light years away, if you're going to send a text message to someone on the nearest star, it would take 4 years for that text message to arrive, and it would then take another 4 years for their reply to come back. So if you sent someone a text on Alpha Centauri saying, do you want to go for a drink tonight, you would get your answer in 2022.
Professor Andy Shearer from NUI Galway. But just because it's difficult doesn't mean there's no one out there sending us texts. Jerry Amon knows this for sure. In the 1970s, he was a volunteer monitoring a huge radio telescope in Ohio called the Big Ear.
For years, the Big Ear scanned the universe and heard nothing but silence.
Until one night in 1977, something happened. Shortly before midnight on the 15th of August, while Jerry was soundly sleeping, the telescope picked up a strong signal of the type it had never heard before.
The Big Ear at that time was a volunteer program, so most of the time it was unmanned. Every couple of days, a technician would drop by to pick up the printouts and then cycle over to Jerry's house to drop them off.
Where I would later review it when I had a chance. And so I didn't know about the signal until 3 or 4 days later when I got the computer printout delivered to my home and started looking at it.
3 days' worth of printouts was about 3/4 of an inch thick.
When Jerry came home from work, he sat down at his kitchen table with a cup of coffee and prepared himself for the formidable task of scanning 100 feet of tedious data.
But this time, it was different.
Within the first 2 or 3 pages, as I was looking through the data, I saw a sequence of numbers and letters. And within about 10 seconds, I had circled those numbers with the red pen I was using and wrote the word WOW! Exclamation point in the margin of the computer printout.
Jerry had just detected a signal 30 times stronger than anything received so far.
Dr. Krause started calling this the WOW! Signal after my notation in the computer printout.
Jerry may have just received the world's first call from ET.
WOW!
Wow indeed. Jerry Amon from What's It All About, the Radio 1 science series that played on Radio 1 Extra this week. And that's a digital station where you can catch up with lots of Radio 1 shows from this week as well as from the archives. And the kind of patience that Jerry Amon had is the kind of patience I thought you needed to milk a cow, but apparently not. When you're putting the milking machine clusters on, you need what the comedians have, timing.
Cows need to be treated rather gently, and there's a whole process there of oxytocin, where a hormone in the pituitary gland allows the milk to flow to the udder, and then the skill of the milker or the farmer is to get the milk from the udder into the bull tank pretty much. So it takes about 90 seconds after prep work for a cow to let down her milk. And we want to maximise the timing of that so that farmers put on the cluster at the right time.
Jim Dockery, teaching Damien O'Reilly how to use a milking machine on last week's Countrywide. One of the other students there was Owen Casey from Ballyhaig, who wants to become a farmer.
Oh yeah, I spent 2 years blowing at Clonakilty Agri College getting the green cert.
Yeah.
So I've that 2 years now. So within the next couple of years, hopefully I'll be gradually taking over to him.
And they say farming's sexy again.
It is sexy, all right. Sexy. It was dead and gone during the boom.
Yeah.
But when the boom went in, this one, everyone came back to farming. Like,
yeah.
There was 94 blowing our class in Clonakilty in 2010. In 2006, there was 24 that were going closing the college. Everyone was gone off in the buildings. Farming was in the past.
Now, what about this course here? Did you think that you knew how to milk a cow?
We did, but still very handy. Just bits there to speed you up. It's safe to speed you up a cow, a second every cow. 60 cows, you know, like this all time. Small things led up.
So what we use is a piece of paper towel, fold it up and just wrap it around the teeth, and we can see the level of teeth spread. See the pattern.
At the other end of the country and the other end of the age scale, the D11 hairdressers in Finglas, Dublin. Brenda Donoghue went there for the Mooney Show to learn about blue rinses. But then, as I'm sure you know, for many people, almost the last thing a good hairdresser is about is hair.
Anne has been doing the hairs of all the mature ladies in Finglas for a long time, including my mother Helen. She would pick up the ladies who hadn't transport and bring them down to the hairdressers to get their hair done.
Is that true?
Yes!
Great.
Yes.
So who did she give a lift to? What's your name?
Anne McLaughlin.
Well, go on. Did she give you a lift,
I
Anne?
Did. She picked me up at 8:45 right at my apartment. At 8:45, I just text Anne. Anne, I'm going down to you this morning. Okay, Anne. Text you when you're there. And she texted me and she said, don't come out. I'll wait at the gate because it's too cold. That right, Anne?
Aww.
That's the truth.
Is that the truth?
Yeah, that is the honest to God truth.
Yeah. And what do you get done now, do you mind me?
I get me cut, wash, blow dry and colour.
And what kind of a colour? Are we blue rinsing it?
I don't know. It's blonde, I know.
Yeah.
I get a lift back and down home.
And what's your name?
Kathleen McGowan.
And Kathleen, do you mind me ask, in around what age are you?
I'm 86.
And you look fantastic. Can you describe your hair for us?
I'm grey.
Yeah. But it's kind of a white grey, isn't it? Yeah. So
silver grey.
A silver grey. And is that natural or do you put a colour in it?
It's natural. Natural, like myself.
Yeah.
It's natural. I'm all natural.
Hi, what's your name?
Sally Kenny.
What happened to you?
I fell in Spain and broke my femur bone and I was laid up a long time, and if I couldn't get to Anna and it'd come down to me, hail rain or snow, and do my hair, it gave me a lift.
And do you mind me ask, how much did it cost?
Very little. Sometimes nothing. That's Anne.
Yeah, that's Anne.
She'd say, no, you're okay.
She's brilliant. Yeah. I'd be quiet.
Go
I'd
away.
Be quiet in a minute.
Why would she evoke such emotion? Do you feel?
It's not very good.
You're crying now thinking about it. And that's okay. Because sometimes when somebody's very kind, doesn't that make you cry? Do, yeah.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. And they're all brilliant.
So she collects your drops, yeah?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you don't.
Anne is, I think I speak on behalf of everybody here to say that Anne is a wonderful person.
Yeah.
She's been very kind over the years to all the ladies.
Goodness me, they're all in tears. Can I just ask, when you come down here to get your hair done, you know, it would take 20 minutes, half an hour if you're just getting a wash and a blow dry. Who stays longer than that?
We all do. I'm on my own. I'm up in the apartment and I come down to Anne and I sit and have, do you want a drink, Anne? Do you want it? She just have me half drunk coming out.
So you come down to get the wash and the blow dry.
Yeah.
And it would take, as I said, half an hour. So how long would you stay?
About 2 hours, 3 hours.
What?
Yes, and they're chatting with all the people and having a great time and talking to all the old ladies and all that.
About
and
3 hours?
Yeah, they're sitting here talking to you.
3 hours? Sounds like she should have her own radio show. That's Anne Doyle, Salon and D11 in Finglas with Brenda Donoghue on Mooney on Thursday.
Before we get into it, actually, Laura, is this a skill you've honed over time? Is it a natural gift you've always had?
Before I finish, back to where we began with Owen McDermott on 2FM. They had a competition for listeners to do their own Rose of Tralee party piece.
Is it a regular party piece? Or?
Oh, yeah. I can also sing How Much Is That Doggy in the Window backwards, but we'll leave that for another day.
Well, I don't think we will. I think we'll do both, actually.
No,
but here we go.
No.
This is Laura from Athlone naming all the counties in Ireland in 10 seconds. Your time starts in 3, 2, 1, go.
Loudmead, Dublin, Wicklow, Wexford, Carlow, Kenny, Offaly, Leash, Clarence, Meenan, Longford, Cork, Kerry, Clare, Tipperary, Watch, Blimmer, Galway, Ulster, Sligo, Leitrim, Roscommon, Donegal, Derry, Down, Antrim, Meath, Monaghan, Monaghan.
Yeah!
And Laura was the winner from Owen McDermott on 2FM. That's Playback for this week. Richard Curran is next with the business after the news, and Emer Horgan is in this seat next week. Just before I go, one of my favourite pieces of music on RTE Radio this week. It's from Roots Freeway on last Saturday night, and it's a piece called The Pendulum from the band No Crows. And I defy you not to want to get up and waltz around to this one. Goodbye.